It's 8:16 now. Good morning. Well, the Summit County Council meets tomorrow, starting at about 3:30 at the County Courthouse in Colville. That after some of the council members plan to attend the inaugural Camas Valley Business Association meeting. That's happening again at the Camas City Hall between 11:30 and 1:30. In the studio with me, I have Summit County Manager Tom Fisher, and he is joined with his newly named Deputy County Manager, Jana Young. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning.
So, Jana, we'll start with you. Congratulations. One of 73 applicants. That's pretty impressive to get to the rise to the top there.
Thank you.
Just tell us a little bit about yourself. I know you've been with Summit County for, what, over a year now, huh?
Yeah. So, we've been coming, my husband and I have been coming to Summit County for years. We have family in the area, own property in Samick and Prospector, and always wanted to settle here with our children. Due to the, wonderful community and open spaces and outdoor recreation, and it was even more exciting when I had the opportunity to work for the county. I've been in a project management role for the last year, primarily working on updating the solid waste master plan, but also serving as a legislative coordinator for our interactions with the state legislature and our work through the Utah Association of Counties. So I'm excited about this new role to be more of in a management and leadership role to help Tom with the day-to-day operations and do what I can to contribute to the strategic goals of the county.
Yeah, so do your job duties change much? So you pretty much continue doing what you've been doing?
Yeah, so I'll continue doing those two things, some special projects that Tom needs some help on. And then also continue with the intergovernmental and legislative affairs. But in addition to that, I'll be helping him manage some other departments like our IT department, facilities, animal control, wildland fire, and emergency management. I think is that everyone?
That's
library. And then whatever other things that Tom needs, to help just run the trains. Each day. It was pretty clear during the interview that our managers were looking to have more of a day-to-day collaboration, coordination with the county administration. So I really see as serving in that role, helping them, whether it's a thought partner in brainstorming solutions and direction and helping them figure out where to go with their priorities or serving as a resource to help them be more successful in advancing the big things they've been tasked with from the council and Tom.
All right. So this Camas Valley Business Association meeting I mentioned, is that under your purview or is that something Anita Lewis then would handle?
Yeah, that's still under Anita Lewis. We're certainly participating in those things, but in terms of being the contact and the coordinator, that's really her area of expertise.
Well, and of course that is another area where we collaborate within the county. So Anita, as rural affairs, concentrating on some of the activities on the east side of the county. But since it's business association, it also has to do with Jeff Jones. And so those two will be collaborating around the Camas Valley Business Association and economic development in general on the east side of the county.
Okay. Well, again, congratulations. So you may be filling in for Tom when he's unavailable.
Yeah,
huh?
I think next week, actually, you'll see me here.
Okay.
On Tuesday.
Well, you know how to get in the building now.
Into the fire, as we say.
Right.
Tom, any updates with regard to that accident that I reported there at Echo Junction?
Well, you gave a very thorough report. I can't add much to that except that, it was such it hit us by surprise, as most of these things do. But the emergency management team and the public safety team across county, across amongst counties and amongst districts, all pulled together really well to deal with that situation yesterday, and really proud of everyone that was involved.
The good news, I guess, no spills of any hazardous materials.
That is good news. Of course, we heard about the one fatality, and that's very tragic, but I'm sure it could have been a lot worse, and not to diminish at all what happened, but it was a significant event.
Oh yeah, the photos are staggering.
Oh,
it's
absolutely
hard to believe that. Yeah, wasn't worse. As we've been reporting this morning, the applicant of the repurposed Colby School Development Hoffvest LLC is issuing a letter to the county, basically demanding that the council postpone its scheduled decision tomorrow, and also to recuse itself altogether and hire a independent counsel. Is this item still on the agenda then for tomorrow?
The item is still on the agenda. I believe the and I'm going to, you know, because there's been within that letter, of course, I've read it, mostly stuff that has to do with our attorney's office and its interaction with the council. So I'm going to leave most of the comments to them on that. But it is still scheduled for tomorrow.
So do you plan to make a decision?
Well, I don't make any decisions. Right. The county council does. So I'm going to leave that up to them.
All right. And then just what's your response then to some of the allegations that were made that the council held an illegally closed-door meeting?
Again, I'm not going to comment on that. The attorney's office is the one that will officially comment on those things.
Okay, so they haven't issued any opinion to you?
Haven't had any interaction on that specifically, just that we're still moving forward.
All right. As I mentioned, some council members will be attending the Camas Valley Business Association. Can you tell us what's happening? I mean, and how the county's economic development efforts are
sure.
having
so,
an impact?
So this group has been meeting for the past year. This is kind of what they're calling their annual meeting. And they've invited the council to participate with that. Jeff Jones has been participating with that group. So has Doug Clyde for the past few months, just to show the county's interest and make sure that if there's any interaction that we need to have with businesses in the Camas Valley, in the South Summit area, that would help economic development in the area, that we can provide that. I think it'll just be a good conversation to see what this group brings together as their priorities.
Okay. Again, that's happening at Camas City Hall tomorrow, 170 North Main Street there in downtown Camas. Also on the agenda, the bond of up to $28 million for the Canyons Resort assessment area. We're going to be using this money to acquire land for affordable housing there in the Lower Canyons Village area.
That's
the
correct.
Ecker Hill Park and Ride, the Kilby, pay for the Kilby Road improvements. Anything else?
Well, it's mostly for off-site parking solutions, I guess, is the way what we're talking about it. But in, as you link that back to projects that are moving forward, that's the Ecker Park and Ride and improvements on Kilby Road that will facilitate that. There's also some road improvements within the canyons that are associated with this bond. And all this is just another step in the process to establish this assessment area and issue bonds and sell bonds that will be paid off by the properties within the canyons.
I heard somebody use the road Kilby Boulevard as opposed to Kilby Road. I mean, is that what we're talking about? I mean, I think of Boulevard as tree-lined streets with maybe a median. And
I think that would be an exaggeration of what we mean by Boulevard. But I think what Derek Radke is describing is that it's going to it's going to be slightly wider with a little bit of paved shoulder available for especially bicycles to safely ride on Kilby Road. But as well, at each of the intersections with cross streets, there are going to be left turn and right turn pockets built in, which will actually cause a little bit of a meander on that straight shot of Kilby Road, which will slow down speeds a little bit. So I think just a little bit of improvement to that, where it's not just two lanes of pavement. It'll have a little interest to it as opposed to that straight road.
Yeah, I don't drive it enough to recall. Do we have that kind of suicide lane? I don't know what they're called. I don't know what the technical term
is.
The
only place that we have a turn pocket that I can think of right now on Kilby Road is by the Powderwood Apartments that leads to that road that goes back into the back end of the Tanger outlets. So it'll be similar to that area right there.
Yeah, but nothing down the center.
No, nothing down the center. No, it's a straight two-lane section.
Yeah. Again, I'm going to ask you, because I know I talked with Chris Robinson, Councilmember Chris Robinson, last week, why the property owners at Canyon Village are paying this, and where is Vail Resort's contribution to this park and ride?
Right, and I listened to that. So, of course, I will try not to countermand anything that that Council Person Robinson said. But, you know, really, Vail is involved in most things, operations. So they operate the golf course. They operate the ski operations. They have seats on the CVMA. So whether they are directly involved with a payment on a property or peripherally involved with the CVMA, they are involved with the parking solutions. They are likely to be part of a master lease, perhaps on housing in the future, because it's largely their employees that will need to be housed there. So I think that's where you're going to see their involvement, as opposed to direct payments into that assessment area.
And I was thinking about this a little bit more, because when we talk about all of the residential development that is still to be built there in the Canyons Village, lower and mm-hmm. upper, I mean, we're talking about, and I don't know, maybe thousands of units that will need to be cleaned, repaired, snow shoveled, people staying in them will need to be fed and massaged, have their ski tunes. I mean, all. So when we talk about this 1,100 beds being built there in the Lower Village, I guess I was always thinking, oh, that's for the lifties and the people on mountain.
Yeah.
And then it's like, no, we got thousands more jobs going to happen right there before you even get on the mountain.
That's absolutely true. And I don't know thousands. I don't know what exactly that number is, but there's going to be more. And so that housing, specifically described and built as workforce housing, will house that range. It'll have everything from what we term as the lifty to all the different levels of service worker. And it will even have some housing that's more in the mid-management range, because there are some townhomes planned for that parcel as well.
Yeah, so I guess when I think about these 1,100 beds coming on, that might serve what we have right now. I mean, when you think about what's still to come, I mean, where are all those people going to live?
Well, you have to also divide it out and say that, you know, not everybody that works at the Canyons wants to live at the Canyons. So it handles a percentage of it. And that's exactly what we're trying to achieve with any type of affordable housing, workforce housing. There are people that want to live or already have their lives established in the Salt Lake Valley or in the Heber Valley or in the east side of the county, that, you know, uprooting that is not exactly what they want to do. But as there is turnover, depending on the transient nature of some of that employment, that's what some of that housing will serve.
A continued discussion, also perhaps a decision on the Woodward-Gorgoza appeal. So are you going to allow the appellants and the attorneys to present any further argument here?
I think, the council has gotten a lot of written material from each of the applicants as well as the appellants, all of the appellants. They've taken a site tour. They've talked a lot with the appellants in public meetings. So I'm not sure what that next step is going to be. But, you know, we've got a couple hours scheduled for that one. So it's likely that there'll be some conversation.
Will you do anything differently as a result of the issues raised in the Colby appeal?
You know, I'm going to leave that up to the attorney's office and the council again to decide how they deliberate. And we'll see how they use that 2 hours.
A hearing on the Mountain Regional annexing community water. Have you had any public input on this?
Have not. I have not received any personal public input on that. Mountain Regional might have if we see that in the public hearing tonight. But you know what I did note is that there's a couple of little changes in the proposal. There are two homes that have to be tied into this. Into this process that weren't part of the original packet back in February 14th, so it's changed the numbers slightly. And we'll hear about that tonight as well.
All right.
Tomorrow night,
yeah.
Sorry.
There'll also be a hearing on the county being a conduit for the bond to improve the Utah Olympic Park and the Kearns Ice Skating Oval. Any input on this?
No, it's just a standard public hearing as part of the process for that set of bonds, and we'll just go through that process.
All right, and then just wanted to ask you, I know that you had attended the meeting hosted by the Bureau of Reclamation last night, which is planning to make Echo a state park and upgrade the facilities. I guess there was something that was raised that this is an area that's sometimes known for some pretty rowdy campers.
Yeah, so you know, it has not. It's been run by a private business for the past 50 years, you know, they've had some issues in the past. You know, a very credible and great group of locals that ran the place, but I think some traditional activities in there are some things that the Bureau of Reclamation and State Parks would like to see work a little differently in the future. So that's one of the reasons they're having these public meetings, is to really work with those. A lot of the adjacent property owners get affected by that. So I think that's what they're really trying to get input on.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to add?
Just wanted to report that I think the siding is done on the South Summit Services Building. Heard that this morning from staff. So we'll be working this week to finish up some small items and try and get this building open to the public as soon as possible.
Okay. Tom Fisher, Janet Young, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
It's 8:32. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the Local News Hour on KPCW. The Park City Planning Commission meeting tomorrow night. City Council chamber starting at 5:30 with Park City Heights and code amendments to remove all of the density transfers off of Treasure Hill on the agenda. In the studio with details, Planning Director Bruce Erickson. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Wanted to ask you real quick first. So the Twisted Branch Road subdivision, a second access basically to Bonanza Flat, has been continued. But can you talk a little bit about what we're working on here?
Sure, sure. This is kind of in the final stages of cleaning up the Flagstaff annexation and all of the Empire Pass development agreements. Twisted Branch exists. It's a private road right now. The development agreement accommodates the restaurant that they're talking about, and they're trying to create all the parcels necessary to accomplish the last phases. So all the density is assigned. They're just doing the rights of way and trying to clean up things towards the end of the development.
Yeah. The restaurant here, is this a Deer Valley restaurant or is this a private restaurant?
Right now, the authority for the restaurant lies with the Empire Pass folks. If Deer Valley chooses to build it and operate it, that's certainly their discussion. But it's been in the development agreement since the project was approved back in the late 80s, early 90s.
So this would be for Empire Pass residents to the skiing public.
It'd be an on-mountain restaurant like the other operations at Deer Valley or Park City Mountain.
Well, that's what I'm asking. I mean, would it be limited to like the yurt at the colony, which is just the colony people, or is this going to be for everybody?
I don't think that's part of our review right now, whether it's going to be open or private like Talisker Club.
All right. And then there's also a warming yurt. Is this the one to replace the one that the Talisker Club has in the middle of Bonanza Flat?
No, this one is closer to the Empire Lodge.
Okay. And then the discussion will also include Deer Valley ski trails and future bridges. Is this to provide access to the Montage, or will it just be to Empire Lodge and the new building that will eventually go down there?
It coordinates a bunch of the crossings. The state highway still goes through there. Marsac Avenue is still Highway 224. It's closed in the wintertime. Deer Valley and Empire Pass are trying to make preparations for the future, which obviously is unknown at this point, whether UDOT will ever open that road or whether there'll be public clamor to open the road, what the results of Bonanza Flat are going to be. So Deer Valley and Empire Pass are trying to set the parameters under which they can move forward should things change.
All right. And then this would actually provide access to folks who use 224 to get to their homes in Brighton Estates?
No. Twisted Branch is a private road. It will remain private unless and until there's a negotiation with UDOT to move existing 224, take that private, and make Twisted Branch the new highway over the top. That could be as much as 10 or 15 years out. It's not an imminent thing. It has to do with what we're doing in Bonanza Flats and one of the reasons the purchase was so important.
Okay. Park City Heights Phase 2 subdivision plat. We're only on Phase 2. This project really has been in the works since 2005, annexed into Park City in 2010. And I guess we're only on the second phase?
Yep. But the second phase is fairly big. And remember, this has to do with some of the absorption rates of units and how Ivory Homes' business model works with their projects in Salt Lake City as well. So they divert resources to the projects that are moving most quickly, whether they're in Salt Lake County or Weber County or Davis County or up here in Park City. The good news is that they have completed a number of their affordable housing units that are required. We have close to a dozen building permits on our desk right now for additional housing units, affordable housing units in their requirement. They're at or slightly ahead of their requirement for building these units. So we're processing those permits as quickly as we can, and you'll see them under construction this year.
Okay. So what's the second phase consist of?
39 lots just uphill in the water tank that has to go in to serve the rest of the development. It's slightly uphill of where you see the existing construction.
All right. And so have all of the affordable units been built?
Some of them are under construction, right? So we have some of the units under construction. We have some with certificates of occupancy right now, and they're on schedule. I can give you that number if you just let me look it up here a second. Six park homes and eight of the townhouses, which are affordable units, have been constructed and have certificates of occupancy. We have a half a dozen units in the planning department under building permit review for the affordability as well.
But it sounds like there's more affordable to come in future phases.
There's a total of 79, I believe, affordable units in that location.
Okay. And then a total of six phases?
Yes.
Okay, still a lot more to come.
There's a lot more to come. These are fairly small phases, and it's not something we're used to seeing in town with smaller lots, right, and moving the process forward.
The city retains a security interest as a holder of the trust deed. How come? I mean, the city sold the property.
We want to make sure that the project is done consistent with our general plan and our land management code, and we want to have some responsibility inside the design guidelines and operations of the owners association.
And determining a price for the affordable units hung up the sale of those units in the first phase. Have we settled that out?
Yes, that resolution was passed last year for the next round of pricing. Community Development Director Ann Laurent is handling the pricing with her team. And she's being pretty careful with how that pricing works and the average median income, or AMI.
Land management code amendments, this is to remove the density rights from Treasure Hill. Why are we doing this?
Well, there's two reasons. One, we were told to do it by the city council at the last meeting when they adopted the resolution. And basically, the land management code had a provision to allow approximately 10% of the density of Treasure to be transferred to a different location under what we call transferable development rights. And there's a couple other pieces of property that are sending zones. There never was a landing place for that density to be transferred to. There was a lot of discussion, like Snow Park or Park City Mountain Resort or Huntsman property. But the economics of transferable development rights stand in the way of a lot of that. So in order to make sure that the deal, if you will, with Sweeney and the folks that own Treasure Hill is as clean as possible and as transparent as possible to the public, we're just going to take away that section of the land management code and not deal with transferable development rights moving this project forward.
So why was the Treasure's TDRs put into the land management code anyway?
Well, they are all in there. It was just that Treasure had a limitation put on them. The other ones had platted lots. So if you had a lot on Ridge Avenue, you knew what your asset value was. Treasure, since they didn't have a complete conditional use permit, you didn't know exactly what those unit equivalents were and what was going to transfer. Treasure was big enough and is big enough that you could see a significant impact if they were to transfer 100% of their density or 50% of their density. All you're doing is shifting the problem.
Is it pretty straightforward, though, what Planning Commission is
going to
do?
Yeah, it's really straightforward. It just removes this section of the code moving forward. The policy is in place by the City Council, so Planner Astorga is moving this along.
Okay, and then strategic code enforcement update. This is just, the quarterly report from Chief Building Official Thacker?
Deputy Chief Downer is going to give the presentation along with me. City Council wants additional outreach and visibility on code enforcement. So the Planning Department and the Building Department got together and said, okay, let's brief the Planning Commission in addition to the City Council, and then next week we'll brief the Historic Preservation Board on the same matters so that they understand the complexities of code enforcement, some things about notice and order and repair of dilapidated buildings, what our regulations are on raising historic structures. So we're doing as much outreach as we can. This is in preparation for a whole series of new land management code changes that are coming forward in April and May that will deal with parking and gravel, RV parking. Planner Tyler is bringing forward some deregulation in the affordable housing side of the land management code, and Planner Gron is bringing forward changes in the historic district to clarify and probably hopefully make simpler how to do solar installations in the historic districts. All that's coming forward, this code enforcement is sort of the first step of outreach.
Okay. Hey, Bruce, thanks.
Thank you.
It's Park City Planning Director Bruce Erickson. It's 8:43. Good morning. Joining me now in the studio, the president and CEO of the Park City Chamber Bureau, Bill Malone, along with Richard Bessemer with the Thin Air Conference. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Bill, let's start with you. Lots of topics to cover. First, let's just start with a recap of the legislative session. In terms of the marketing dollars that you're going to have to work with next year, what are we talking about?
Pretty positive note on that with the budget that was approved at for the what's called the Tourism Marketing Performance Fund was $24 million. That's up from $21 million the previous year. Kind of a nod to the fact that tourism is generating about $1.15 million in local and state taxes here. And so for us, the good news is that part of that money is going to the Utah Sports Commission. And we get some help out of that with world championships and events up at the UOP, as well as, you know, there's a co-op funding program that we apply for. So we're one of the counties that applies for co-op funds out of that.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about liquor laws. I'm hearing that a change to the dining club license stands to affect a lot of local businesses.
Yeah, there's several businesses, especially in the Old Town area that were actually dining clubs licenses. In 2017, the legislature did away with dining clubs, and there was kind of a simplification of they wanted to do this is a bar and this is a restaurant. And there was always that kind of middle ground as to, well, what is it? So that is going into effect in July of 2018. And a lot of those businesses have to choose which direction they want to go in terms of their license. Do they want to be a restaurant or do they want to be a bar? What happened this year where there were some modifications to it, while the law from 2017 is still going to go into effect, but they made some modifications to it to places that really didn't have enough seating space away from a bar that could adapt to that. And then also allowed some places to do two licenses. So if there's one room that could be a bar and one room that could be a restaurant. So they're trying to make some modifications to it. It's very difficult because every place is different in terms of its layout and what works and what doesn't. So I think some places found some relief with some of the modifications to the law. Some didn't.
Yeah, and so that's going to make them again, choose whether or not they become a bar where nobody under 21
Correct.
Can walk into, or a restaurant where their sales must be, I think, 70% has to mm-hmm. be food related.
Yes. Yeah. And they're giving some time to get people to that from a percentage basis on the food alcohol ratio. So it'll be a difficult decisions for some of these places to make to say, which way, you know, where is the strength in our business, and do we go this direction or that?
In terms of anything else with regard to liquor laws?
Yeah, we're disappointed. I think you remember a year or so ago there was a lot of a little consternation going on with some of our international guests having to use passports as identification in liquor stores, and we thought that was going to be a pretty simple fix by allowing international driver's licenses, but that didn't happen. There were some challenges with how easily some international driver's licenses could be modified. So back to the drawing board on that one.
Hmm. Is there a way just to get a Utah identification card?
I don't know if that pays if you're here when we have international guests that come for long weekends. So I don't think there's something there. But, well, you know, it'll be a topic again next year.
Okay. Anything else from this session?
You know, I think there was, you know, you play offense and defense when it comes to the legislative session. But overall, I think there were a lot of things that were probably pretty positive for the area in areas of transportation, things such as that. So kind of came away with it with a couple of pluses and a couple of minuses.
Okay. What about this winter season? Is it one for the record books, or do we know yet?
It's not going to be for the record books. This is a roller coaster of emotion season. It seems like we went from times around the early part of the season really wishing it would snow, and what was that doing to the reservations and the bookings. And then, you know, boy, I tell you, it was probably only maybe a month and a half ago or 5 weeks ago. We were worried if we were going to make it to the end of the season. And now, look, you know, we're doing a strong finish with the snow here for the last 2 weeks of the season. So, no, it's not going to be one for the record books. We lost some momentum kind of in the middle there. But I'm really pleased with, you know, it's not only the resiliency of the community in order to weather these things, but it shows to me a resiliency in our customer that actually will make reservations in March for a vacation in March. So it'll come away. It won't be our best year ever, but it certainly won't be our worst.
Yeah. I mean, it still felt busy, and I don't even know how to judge that anymore.
I think there's, every season does have a different feel to it. I think when you really look at it, and this season we went through a lot of time where I think there were a lot of people off the slopes and in town, in restaurants, you know, shopping, things. If you think back over the holiday period, we had, you know, kind of limited access and limited number of runs at that time. And I think so. I think while the people were here, the skier days may not show it, but the lodging occupancy, I think, will probably show a little bit better than the skier days on a percentage basis.
Okay. Well, let's turn it over to Richard. Richard, you're organizing this Thin Air Conference?
Yeah, I work with the team with Bill and the folks of the chamber, and we have a small team of some people who have volunteered their time to help us pull this together. This is our third year for 2018 Thin Air.
Yeah, and the idea was to bring people here kind of in a slow time of the ski season, so yeah, There'll still be skiing available.
Yep, and exactly. And, you know, the original conceit for Thin Air was to create a conference that would actually try to draw other business groups to bring their events to Park City and have their event or retreat take place alongside Thin Air. We've learned in terms of going to the second year of this that we've that's a little bit more difficult to make that happen because of the different planning cycles. Thin Air, a lot of these groups want to have things maybe worked out a year and a half in advance, and we tend, from our perspective, to be a little bit later planning on that from the Thin Air side of things. So instead, what we've done is we've actually worked more closely with other companies and groups to have them become our bolt-on partners. And so the big news for 2018, for instance, is we're working closely with Snow Sports Industries America, SIA. They've moved their headquarters here to Park City. They've sold their trade show and are now basically repositioning their organization to become more of an intelligence and research-driven organization to support the ski and snow sports industry. And so they've created an event called SIA Spring Fest at Thin Air. And their goal is to basically bring the industry together to Park City at the end of the season. This will be the first year we do that, with bringing maybe a couple hundred people out here. And have their industry commingle with the type of customers and speakers that we typically bring to Thin Air, which is an eclectic mix of different industries, of innovators from finance and healthcare and retail and entertainment, and have them kind of play alongside the snow sports industry people. So we're really excited about that, because that actually is a big change from what we've done in the past.
Yeah. So who is it? Do you have a keynote speaker?
So, you know, we kind of tend to shy away from the traditional kind of keynote model. But I will tell you we have the similar formula, which is an opening night, which we've now shifted everything one day. So the opening night is on Thursday night at Park City Live. That's going to be a week from this Thursday, April 5th. And that event is typically a reception cocktail party along with a show and business panel conversation in it, with Tom Kelly and some Olympians. So we have a lot of fun with that. And so the big news that we're doing for this year's with Thin Air is, rather than have a keynote, we're actually bringing in a comedian, a female comedian named Sarah Colonna, who is a very, very funny woman. And we were going to have her just do a couple segments, but the more we started to talk to her, we realized that we might have her actually be the MC and run the show a little bit. And, you know, I'm kind of curious to see how this comes off because I have to be up there on stage a little bit. And so I'm going to kind of see what happens if she makes fun of me. but it should be kind of light and funny and see what happens. So it's on Thursday.
And then Friday, you've got something that everybody can attend. You've got a street dance, kind of.
Yeah. So, and then Friday, Friday really has two components of the day. The first part is the knowledge sessions at Santee Auditorium. We run breakout sessions from 8:30 in the morning till 4 o'clock in the afternoon. There's about seven of them, and these are really interesting breakout sessions. Just to give an example, one is called From Geek to Great: How Comic-Con Revolutionized the Entertainment Industry. So we have some folks coming in from New York and the Salt Lake Comic-Con group to talk about how they've developed that conference over the years. We actually have a group, a design thinking firm called IDEO, which is based in the Bay Area, and they're running a 90-minute workshop with around several hundred people in the Santee Auditorium around how we can attack the participation issue in winter snow sports. So that's going to happen all on Friday. Then in the afternoon, we kick over to Main Street, and we're partnering with YSA, where they're having the Olympic-Paralympic Parade, which starts at 5 o'clock, and that dovetails then into the Main Street concert, which is at 7 o'clock, featuring Citizen Cope, which is going to be a great show. Hopefully you get great weather. And again, these are free community events that kind of keynote the Thin Air Festival for the public.
Okay. People can get more information where?
You can go to thinairparkcity.com. You can see the schedule. You can see the ticketing information. As you mentioned, we have the all-in pass, which is for everything, which gets you the opening night and the breakout sessions and the Thin Air Lounge at Butcher's. Includes lots of food and drink. That ticket's priced at $250. But then what we've done is we've priced the Santee sessions for only $25 to go there all day on Friday and see some amazing speakers and kind of participate in those workshops. They're really, really fun. And we wanted to just basically make this really accessible for a lot of people in the community to get a taste for it and have some fun with it.
Okay. Hey, guys, I need to leave it there. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Leslie.
Well, coming up this Saturday, LA Theater Works presenting The Mountaintop. On the phone with details, I have the producing director, Susan Lowenberg. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning.
Tell us a bit, if you would, about LA Theater Works. I know this isn't your first visit to Park City.
LA Theater Works is a rather unique organization. We're not a theater company, but we are a theater media company. And our mission is to record the best plays in the American and world canons and make them available through audio to the largest possible audience. And to date, we have recorded over 500 plays. We've been doing this since the late 80s. And we record them. We have a weekly radio show on NPR stations throughout the country. We also podcast. You can go on our website. You can hear them streaming live. And we have an audio publishing division where we sell and distribute the recordings worldwide, and we have about 8 million listeners a year.
So on Saturday, though, you won't be doing a live performance, right?
Right. So one of the other activities of LA Theater Works, one of the very important activities, is that each year we select a play from our catalog and we tour it around the country in the same way that, for example, Ira Glass tours his radio show around the country. And we do that because we want our audiences who experience us on audio to be able to actually see us in action. When we record a play in Los Angeles in front of the audience, we do it in the manner of the way the old-fashioned radio shows used to do it, except we do it with modern technology. And our audiences watch us record the plays in Los Angeles. We have a large and faithful audience. We do it seven times a year with seven different plays. Instead of sets, we use projections. Actors work to microphones. We have a sound effects artist on stage. But when we're recording, the actors, of course, hold their scripts because they don't want to make any mistakes. They don't want to miss a word, for example, because it is going to be recorded. But when we're traveling around the country, we do a sort of what I call a sort of glamorized version of the way we record in L.A. And so it's really much more like a conventional theater production, except the actors do work to microphones. So people get kind of a taste of what we're doing, although we add lighting and costumes and all the other things that people are used to when they're watching watching a performance.
So this weekend, it's The Mountaintop. It's a two-person play basically commemorating the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. So just two people on stage, not a whole lot going on other than the words, huh?
Well, it's interesting that you say that. There's a whole lot going on. It's an extraordinary piece. It was originally actually on Broadway with Angela Bassett and Sam Jackson, and that's when I first saw it, and I was captivated. And what makes the play so fabulous and fascinating and heartbreaking and funny all at the same time, it takes place, it's a fantasy, but of course a lot of the material in it tells us a great deal about Martin Luther King. It takes place on the last night of his life in the Lorraine Motel in Memphis, Tennessee. You will recall that tragically he was assassinated on the balcony of the Lorraine Motel. He had gone out there for, I think, to smoke a cigarette with his with some of his colleagues when he was assassinated. So the play takes place. He's by himself in the motel. It's the last night of his life, and he has an encounter. He calls up for a cup of coffee with the hotel maid. But halfway through the play, we realize she is not the hotel maid. She's the angel who's been sent to take him to the other side. And as he begins to realize that he is that this is it, that he's going to die, the play turns in tone. And what is brilliant about this piece is this maid, quote unquote, is a very interesting, feisty person. And so she challenges him in so many ways. And he, it's both, you know, there is a lot of flirtation. There is a lot of comedy. She begins to challenge him. He's working on a speech. She seems to know everything about him and what he stands for and what he does. She knows all about his personal life. So what we get in this is a kind of jousting between these two very colorful personalities, and we get to learn about Martin Luther King, the man, the personal side of the man, and the public side of the man, and his greatness.
Okay.
And
hey, Susan, I need to leave it there, but I appreciate your time. Again, the performance is happening this Saturday night, 7:30 p.m. You can find out more by going to elcocenter.org or calling the box office 435-655-3114.